Please turn to Matthew chapter 8. What we want to talk about is faith. Great, little, and perfect. Great faith, little faith, and perfect faith. Now, simply put, faith is to believe God. That's all it is. To believe God, God must provide something to believe, right?
Right.
He must tell us something. He must show us something. If you're going to believe Him, you got to know what to believe, right?
Right.
Without God providing something to set man's heart upon, man can believe. And man believes a lot of stuff. But it's not faith. That's the difference. Man believes a whole lot of stuff, but it's not faith unless it's God supplied. God is never going to tell you that you're a loser. So if you believe that, that didn't come from God. He has to supply you what to believe. A good parent will supply their children what they need. Well, we as God's children need to believe something. Because everybody believes something. But we are not interested in something. We're interested in believing God. Do you see the difference? It's so simple. Now, look at this record. Matthew chapter 8. Jesus is going to just heal a man. And then he ventures into Capernaum. And Capernaum was where Peter lived. Peter and his brother. And others. So in Matthew chapter 8. Verse 5, and when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him. Now this is significant because this is a Roman military soldier. He was not of Israel. Jesus came to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And this guy is going to approach Jesus Christ, even though he had, in a manner of speaking, he didn't have the right to do so because he wasn't of Israel. And saying, Lord. So the first thing you realize is he calls him what?
Lord.
He calls him Lord. This is a military man. He understood what he was saying in that I am recognizing you as Lord.
Wow.
I'm calling you Lord. And yet, really, who was the soldier's quote-unquote Lord? Caesar. But he's calling him Lord. Interesting. My servant, and this word servant could be translated child. So whether it was a servant or a relative of the centurion, it was more than likely a child. Lieth at home sick of the palsy. That means he was paralyzed. Grievously tormented. That means whatever his paralytic condition, it was not pleasant. It was torturous. And the compassion in this man said, I am going to go to the fountainhead of truth. I am going to go to where this deliverance can occur. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. This is a break from what Jesus typically did. He didn't deal with Gentiles, those that are not of Israel. But he makes this decision to do this. Now, I want you to pay attention carefully. This actually happened 2,000 years ago. Place yourself there. He's talking to the master. And the master says, I will do this. And look at what he says. And the centurion answered and said, again, Lord. He calls him Lord again. I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof. But speak the word only, and my servant or child shall be healed. Look at what he thought about Jesus Christ. He's saying, only say the word. You don't even have to come. I believe so much in you. I am so convinced in you. All you got to do is say the word. How did this man come to this. We don't know. We don't know what happened or what convinced him. But he does provide Jesus with an illustration of his life. Look at this next verse. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. So he understands authority. And I say to this man, go, and he goeth. And to another, come, and he cometh. And to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. And he's trying to communicate to Jesus that he understands what it means to have authority in a category. When Jesus heard it, he marveled. There are very few times in the Bible where Jesus is marveling. He is amazed. He's not amazed when he walks on the water. He's not amazed when he stops the storm. He's not amazed when he raises the dead. He's not amazed when he heals people of evil spirits. He's amazed at this. He is amazed. Why? And said to them that followed. Now he's going to tell the people that are following him. Verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith. No, not in Israel. The people you think that would believe God didn't. He says great faith. You know what great faith means? Great faith in the context is referring to those that have more obstacles to overcome. This man was not of the right pedigree. He was not of the bloodline. It doesn't even say that he was a proselyte, converted to Israel. It says he was a centurion. So he had a lot more to overcome. And I say unto you, verse 11, that many shall come from the east and west and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom, meaning those that are of the right bloodline, shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In other words, the ones that you expect to receive the blessing won't. And the ones that maybe feel outcast, the ones that feel out on the fringe, the ones that do not feel enfranchised, they feel disenfranchised, they're the ones that are going to get the blessing. And Jesus said unto the centurion, go thy way. Now watch this carefully. And as thou hast what?
Believe.
What's it say?
Believe.
As thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee. And the servant was healed in the same selfsame hour. So what did he believe? That's the question. What did he believe? He believed that Jesus had the authority to heal the child. That Jesus was Lord in this situation. Because he never would have addressed him as Lord if Jesus was not capable and didn't have the authority to carry this out. Do you see it? There you see an illustration of what faith actually is. Amidst all the negative circumstances, all these obstacles against this man, he pierces right through and gets to the master. And he recognizes that Jesus is Lord. Wow. That's pretty powerful. Keep reading. Verse 14. And when Jesus was come into Peter's house, remember that Peter lived in Capernaum. Peter was one of his apostles. He saw his wife's mother laid and sick with a fever. So Peter's wife's mother, his mother-in-law, was sick. And he, Jesus, touched her hand, and the fever left her, and arose and ministered unto them. When even was come, they brought unto him many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word and healed all that were sick. And never says that Jesus marveled again at this. He didn't marvel. He marveled at what the understanding of that centurion had. That he understood authority because of who Christ was. Keep reading. That it might be fulfilled which was spoken by, this is Isaiah, the prophet saying, himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. Now when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart unto the other side. And a certain scribe came and said unto him, Master, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. And Jesus said unto him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. That means Jesus was not necessarily a property owner. He didn't have like a central location from which his ministry kind of moved out. He went where? Among the people, in the highways and byways, all over the place. And another of his disciples said unto him, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. But Jesus said unto him, follow me and let the dead bury their dead. Meaning, let the city take the responsibility. And when he was entered into a ship, watch this, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea. This would be the Sea of Galilee. Insomuch that the ship was covered with waves, but he was asleep. So, you know, this is a big kind of rowboat, we would call it. Big, heavy, wooden. And the waves are so big that they're flopping over the side. But Jesus is asleep on the boat. And his disciples, verse 25, came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us. We perish. They did call him Lord. They said, save us. We perish. And he said unto them, watch this. Why are ye fearful? O ye of what? Little faith. Why is it little faith here? And with the centurion, it's great faith. You have great faith with the centurion. You have little faith with the disciples. You want to know why? Because the disciples were with the master. They should know better. The disciples were with the master. They had been with him for a while up to this point. That's why he says, ye of little faith. Watch this. Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled. Who marveled?
The men.
Did Jesus marvel?
No.
The men what?
Marveled.
Because they had little faith. Our expectation should be Ephesians 3:20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. But we think too little of ourselves at times, or we magnify our circumstances and say they're bigger than God. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? Well, I'll tell you what kind of man he was. He was the Son of God. Great faith, little faith. Look at Hebrews 12. Let's look at perfect faith. Throughout time, people have had great faith. Throughout time, people have had little faith. But now, what you have and I have is perfect faith or complete faith. You don't have great and you don't have little. You have perfect faith. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, meaning the testimony of those that have believed God throughout the ages, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience or endurance the race that is set before us. Look at this. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. The word finisher is perfecter. He perfected faith. He perfected it. And you know what? That perfect faith, which was he perfected, he completed it, is what's been given to you. You don't no longer have to have great faith. You no longer have to have little faith. You have perfect faith. It's the faith of Jesus Christ. It's completed. It's as if you walked in his shoes. As if you went to Calvary, which is the place where he was executed. As if you did it. As if you hung on the cross. As if you died. As if you were raised from the dead. As if you ascended into heaven. All of that is what the faith of Christ, the perfect, complete faith means. You have the whole package. So whenever you believe God, it kicks into a category that's beyond the natural. It kicks into a supernatural. And it's called the faith of Jesus Christ. When you believe God, it isn't a matter of great or little. It's a matter of perfect. Because you have Christ within you. That is what the faith of Christ has done. Now, look at 1 Peter. Here's the guy that was with him during these things. This is what he had to say. It doesn't mean that you will not be challenged. You will be challenged. Come, welcome to life. We all have it. You are not in a unique position that no one has ever been in. There has been thousands and thousands and thousands of people that have been in similar situations like you and me. You're not a victim. The world will tell you you're a victim. You're not a victim. That's not what God says. You can hide behind that if you want. Good luck. Enjoy your life. You're not a victim. This is what the guy who spent a year with Jesus, was there during those records we just read, had to say. Peter, chapter 1, 1 Peter, verse 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus and Galatia and Cappadocia, Asia and Bithynia, elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through the sanctification of the Spirit, that means to be set apart, unto obedience and sprinkling of the blood of Jesus Christ. The sprinkling represents the forgiveness of sins. The forgiveness of sins. You have been completely and totally forgiven. Do you realize that for the rest of your days on this earth, God holds no sin against you? Grace unto you and peace be multiplied. Watch this. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again, or caused us to be born again, unto a lively hope, it's a living hope, by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Do you believe that Jesus was raised from the dead? Do you really believe that? Yes. Would you be willing to say that publicly? Would you be willing to testify, to witness in a court of law or in the public arena that Jesus Christ got up from the dead? Would you? To an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. Well, let me ask you a question. Can you lose the money that's in the bank? Sure you can. Anything that's preserved or reserved for here on earth, you can lose. If it's reserved in heaven, can it be lost?
No.
It's impossible because no one can touch it. And who's guarding it? God. Who's going to take it from him? Who's going to sneak around the back of heaven and get in the back door? This is what you have for the future, your glory. Look, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. It's done through faith, the faith of Jesus Christ. Because you and I did not deserve this. He did it for you. Now, what I'm saying here does not mean circumstances or challenges that you have are immediately resolved. It doesn't mean that. What it does mean is your attitude towards them can change. That's the difference. Wherein, verse 6, ye greatly rejoice now, though now for a season, if need be, you're in heaviness through manifold temptations. In this world, there will be that. And it comes in waves. That the trial of your faith, the trial of your faith doesn't mean that God necessarily is testing you. That's not what it means. It means in a corrupted world that is immoral, unjust, you're going to have some challenges. That's what it means. You are going to be challenged to not believe that Jesus lived on this earth, that died for you, and was raised from the dead. You are going to be challenged to believe that. Because that is to believe God. Watch this. Being much more precious than of gold that perisheth. You know, gold is might be the highest representation of what the earth has to offer in terms of value and wealth. Gold. But it's going to perish. Though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. Whom, having not seen, ye love. Have you seen Jesus?
No.
I haven't seen him. And in fact, I don't know anybody who has seen him. All the ones that saw him are dead. Yet I'm staking my life on this man. I'm staking my whole outlook on everything on a guy I've never seen. So are you. Peter saw him. This is coming from the mouth of a guy who lived with him, who ate with him, who laughed with him, who cried with him, who listened to his stories and his gospel around the campfire. Whom, having not seen, ye love. In whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith. Here's the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. There's great faith, there's little faith, and there's perfect, complete faith. You have perfect faith because you have not seen him. They saw him. The centurion saw Jesus. The disciples saw him. That's why it's great and little. Ours, though, is at a higher level. It's perfect and complete. You can't add anything to it. Why? Because you have not seen him. And you still believe. So, kudos to you. This is a great day. Because nothing can override, nothing can negate, nothing can surmount the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Amen?